All right. So we'll do the week two. Today is week two of the Kabbalah of Animals. I've called today's one channeling the energy because, first of all, let's do a review of last week, which this time is a bit more important because what we're going to talk about today is sort of the practical application of the theoretical, the esoteric ideas we talked about last week. So we talked about the four layers of creation, the silent, the inanimate, in other words, the vegetation, the animal kingdom, and the purpose, and the human being. The human being is the one to achieve the purpose of creation. But we need animals. That's what we came to conclusion last week, right? We were talking about how sometimes we see that we need animals, on the other hand, animals are not as the same as people. So the clarity of that is that the purpose of creation is definitely through the human being, and it's helped along and supported by animals. And we explained the idea of the two Kabbalistic worlds, of the world of chaos and the world of order, before God chose to manifest himself in an orderly structure of 10 powers. There was this idea of the world of chaos, the very explosive, impulsive, emotional world, so to speak, which has very, very strong power, which is even higher in a way than preceded and stronger and more powerful than the world of order. And we explained that animals actually have their spiritual origin in the what we call the spiritual evolution, which is the supernal animals who source themselves from the world of chaos, which is stronger than the world of order. And from the supernal animals, the angels and so on, they evolve into the actual animals that we have today, which are impulsive, self-centered, emotional. That's what animals are, right? But they have a lot of good things, which we'll talk about. But we are strengthened by the animals and by the power and the passion of the animals. Just the only thing is that we have to channel them correctly. We have to channel the energy from the animals correctly and absorb it into the world of order so that we can use it, be supported by it, and then strengthen the world of order and the purpose and the meaning that we bring into the world. Just before we continue into today's discussion, just a reminder, next Thursday we're going to just do a one-off. It was supposed to be 2 weeks, but we shifted everything over a week. I was going to do 2 weeks of moral dilemmas, well, just do one. And then the week after, we're starting a 3-week series before Rosh Hashanah, which I've called Festival Symbols, Meaning and Mystery. We've done a similar thing in years past where we took some of the things of the high holidays. We're not going to do apple and honey this time because I think we've done that quite a lot. But we'll take other stuff that people are familiar with, but not necessarily familiar with the depth and the lessons that we can learn going into a new year. We start the month of Elul begins next week, which is the month of preparation or reflection, gearing up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We talk about this every year. The year of Elul is a very special year. I'm only highlighting this because we're preparing a really busy program all the way through Elul and through the high holidays. So check the WhatsApps, check the emails, and come along, mainly. Bring other people with you. Let's make it a big Elul. Okay. So today I want to look at four animals. There's a reason why I'm choosing these four, because they come together in a fairly famous piece, passage from Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers. And they also provide quite a good framework for this idea of channeling the energy appropriately. I say that because, just as introduction, when we talk about channeling the energy of animals into and absorbing them into our experience, it's learning from the animal, not becoming an animal, right? That's I think, the best way to put it. In other words, animals are fairly impulsive beings. They're fairly self-centered, actually. And there's a reason for that, because humility can only come through intelligence. When you understand that there's something beyond yourself, when you understand that sometimes you need to make decisions that are not in line with your feeling or your impulse at the time, right? That's why human beings have that ability to be moral, to make decisions, and to have free choice. It also comes from a certain surrender and humility to truth, to higher values, and so on. Animals don't possess that. And therefore, animals by design are who they are and self-preserving and do things which are good for them at the time, right? So therefore, when we talk about absorbing traits from animals, we certainly don't mean absorbing the self-centered traits or the impulses that they have in the animalistic way. We have our own animal to deal with. We certainly don't need more. Right? We have our own animal soul to deal with. Right? So when we talk about learning from animals, it's about really understanding the origin of the animals, the origin of those traits, and how we can channel them in an appropriate way. This will become more evident as we talk about it. So I'm just going to grab one of these papers so that I can remember how I translate it. So there's a famous passage in Pirkei Avot, in the passage of the fathers, in the ethics of the fathers, I mean, that is authored by Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema. I put it on the handout. You can see it there. It says, Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Yehuda, the son of Tema, says, Have as a kanemer, one should be brazen and bold like a leopard. Right? Kal kanesha, one should be as light as an eagle, swift as a deer, and gibor ka'ari, strong or mighty as a lion, to do the will of our Father in heaven. That was the passage, all right? Now, that Mishnah encapsulates this idea because, as we said, we're supposed to learn from animals, not become animals. And this becomes very, very much, it's interesting how everything in Torah is very exact. So even when we get told the author of a passage, because in Pirkei Avot, I'll just give you a bit of background to this. In Pirkei Avot, if you learn the ethics of the fathers, there are many sayings, social sayings, respectful sayings, morality sayings, from different sages, right? So we'll say, Hillel would say this, Shammai would say that, and over here it's Yehuda ben Tema. Now, Yehuda ben Tema didn't only teach this passage, obviously. He taught many, many, many things throughout his lifetime, both in the halachic part of Torah, in the spiritual part, in the social part, and so on. But what it means is that teaching this one, he had a particular connection to this particular saying, something he would teach often. And therefore, very often what we actually learn, we learn a bit of meaning of a certain passage by examining, in a mystical way, by examining the name of the author. Right? This is something Lubavitcher Rebbe explains on this Mishnah, actually, that this Mishnah was also, this passage was authored by Yehuda ben Tema. Right? And it surrounds this idea of learning four things from four different animals. Why is his name so important? Because his name is a foundation of how to learn from animals. So just as an example, we'll talk about the Sunni in greater detail, we'll talk about each animal in greater detail, but it talks about being brazen like a leopard. Now, brazenness is not a good thing. Normally, it's arrogance, it's brazenness, it's chutzpah, right? In fact, the same Yehuda ben Tema carries on the passage, which I didn't copy because it's not relevant to our discussion today. And he says that brazenness is actually a terrible thing. And he says those that are brazen end up in Gehinom, as he calls it, right? And those that are boshet panim, those that are more bashful and sort of sensitive and refined, end up in Gan Eden. So brazenness is actually a terrible thing. And yet he starts off the passage by saying that we need to learn brazenness from a leopard. Yeah? But we can do that, and we'll see how we do that in a minute, and use it for positive, if we preface it by what he stood for himself. What did he stand for? He said his name is Yehuda ben Tema. So in Hasidic philosophy, they talk about the name Yehuda, which comes from the same word as Mordeh, like Mordeh Ani, which besides being praising or thanking, it actually means to surrender. Which we've often talked about this. We talk about the idea of bitul, of negation of ego and surrendering to something else and surrendering to God, right? That's what we do in the morning. We say Mordeh Ani. We actually not just thanking God, but as the Hasidic masters explain, we're surrendering to God, right? We're waking up in the morning and we're saying to God, look, me and you have a difference of perspective here. We look at the world a bit differently than you do, right? When we wake up in the morning, what's our reality is, you know, the hot cereal that's on the table for breakfast. What's your reality is godliness. It's a different reality, right? For us, godliness is a bit of a concept that's abstract. But when we say, Hasidim was explaining, when we say, but there are me in the morning, it's not just thanking God for giving us another day, it's actually surrendering to God, right? Surrendering to come around, to look at things the way He looks at them. So that's the name Yehuda. Yehuda means we submit, we surrender. In other words, the name Yehuda is completely opposite to the concept of arrogance, completely opposite of the concept of self-centeredness, right? There's more there on the table, just in front of me. Yeah. There's more there, Amen. Right there. Yeah. Right, so it's actually, so Yehuda, the name Yehuda is actually a symbol of humility, right? In other words, to understand this passage about learning from animals, we have to preface it by the innate surrender that we have from our soul to God. To not look at things in a self-centered way, not look at things in an egocentric way, but look at things of how can we use them for a higher purpose. So we're going to learn brazenness from a leopard, but the leopard doesn't have it, the leopard has it in a very egocentric way. We need to take that brazenness and understand how we apply it in the journey of learning and channeling the energy from animals, but how we apply it in a surrendered way, in a humble way, in a way that we think about higher purpose beyond ourselves rather than using it in an impulsive, self-centered way. That make sense? Yeah? Okay. And then he says, what's the idea of Ben Tema? Why do we need to know his father's name? So in Aramaic, the word Tema means to express it, right? Tema means to say, to express, to manifest. So Yehuda means surrender and Tema means to manifest. Meaning, as the Rebbe explains in this talk, that sometimes people have a sense of humility, but they have a sense of humility when they're feeling very humble. Like they might daven in the morning or say Modei Ani. And at that point, the innate humility of the soul is there and we feel it. But then when we go about our day and we go through the journey and the routine of the day, somehow that humility takes backstage and doesn't express itself in every single part of the day, right? So Yehuda ben Tema is telling us, before we start learning from the animals, here's the rule. Number one, you need to discover and connect to that Yehuda, that surrender, that humility, that submission to something higher than ourselves. And you have to make sure that you carry it with you and you remember it all the time as you go through the experience of the day and you learn from the different animals. Tema, that humility has to express itself in everything that you apply. It's a very beautiful introduction to learning from animals. Okay? So, let's go back to the four animals. So, first one is a leopard. So, apparently, leopards have a lot of chutzpah. I'm not very familiar with animals, but as we said, chutzpah generally is a bad thing. It's arrogance. Chutzpah, it's interesting to define what chutzpah means, right? How would you define chutzpah?
Cheeky.
Yeah, cheeky, but what is it? It's not just disrespect, although it normally is disrespect as well.
The negative connotation.
Yeah, the negative connotation.
Audacity.
Sorry, audacity. It could be. We're going to talk about good chutzpah in a minute, right?
Yeah, I mean, from the point of view of sometimes it's important to speak out.
Yeah. That's what we're going to talk about. That's what we have to learn from the leopard.
Yeah.
We have to make sure that we're doing good chutzpah, not bad chutzpah. Because when we talk about negative chutzpah, no negative chutzpah means a tremendous putting forward of self to the point of disregarding anything else, right? So it's interesting that people who have a lot of chutzpah or brazenness often are overconfident, often have no regard for other people, and it's all about them, right? It's a very sort of wrong application of arrogance, right? And it's it's normally people who have no inhibitions. But in a negative way. I mean, having no ambitions can be good sometimes, but it's like having no ambition, therefore not even being sensitive to other people. Just say what they want, have no tact, you know, it's all part of brazenness, right? All part of chutzpah.
But they sometimes achieve a lot more
by being put to death, very powerful.
That's a. Oh. No, hold on a second. Sorry?
Isn't that what you mean by good?
No. No, because it's interesting you say they achieve more. They do, often. You know, I don't know if you remember, we once had a series on narcissism, right? And there was an interesting study about narcissistic people that they often make it very quickly to the top of the ladder in the corporate world. Right? There was a study in there. But also the quickest to go, right? Because achieving a lot is very important, but it's not always a good thing.
You lose a lot along the way, though.
You lose a lot, you can lose friends, you can lose other people, you can lose a lot of good values, as we'll soon see with regard to something we learned from the other animals, actually. Right? It's when the focus is just me and what I'm going to achieve, you end up achieving a lot very quickly until people see through it. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you lose it as quickly as you made it, right? Now, you need chutzpah to achieve, but then that's good chutzpah. But I'm saying, you see, the disregard for others is a real problem because, and the lack of tact with disregard to what other people think or feel often is you know, the ambition that comes from without any consideration what other people are feeling, or, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of offensive and it's kind of damaging a lot of times, right? Because on the one hand, we are taught, Pirkei Avot teaches us elsewhere, in fact, it's even earlier on in Pirkei Avot, where the great Rebbe taught that what is the good path for people to take? To do things which are honorable to them, honorable to other people, honorable to God. In other words, we live with higher values, we live with good things, but also we consider the dignity of others while we're doing that, right? In the best possible way. Now, it's not always possible. Sometimes we know we have to do the right thing, whether other people like it or not, but we do consider others when we do things. And that's an important part, right? Also, we know that, I'm talking about manifestations of chutzpah in a bad way. For example, we know that it's also good to be self-aware. Often people with tremendous chutzpah are not self-aware at all, right? In other words, they just, I mean, we all have a bit of this, I suppose, but hopefully not too much. But we, right? I mean, there's a lot of lack of self-awareness that happens as well, where people do things, people climb to the top, people assume positions, people try to achieve things, and they're just not, it's not them, like they're not cut out for it at all. And you do a lot of damage. I mean, politicians do this really well, but often, right? But you end up damaging. You end up doing things that are correct. That's why it's a lack of humility, really. Yeah.
But you can achieve without having that.
Yeah, you can. You can. Of course, you can. Yeah.
So you isolate yourself, if you like.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. It's all negative, really. Yeah. Correct. But there's good chutzpah, right? And that's the chutzpah we have to learn from a leopard. So a leopard apparently is not as strong as other animals, apparently. And now, what's interesting also is that the commentaries, there's a commentary on Mishnah, and I've never heard of this before, and I actually looked it up on Google if it's like a thing today or a thing that people, right? It was just interesting to know, but there's a commentary on Pirkei Avot, I think he's like 13th, 14th century. He was a Sephardic rabbi who lived in Italy. He lived in the town of Bartanura, actually. And his name was Rabbi Vadia of Bartanura. And he, on the Mishnah, he has a commentary on Mishnah in general. And he talks about that the namer, the leopard that the Mishnah is talking about, is actually a really funny kind of animal. It's a hybrid resulting of a crossing between a male leopard and a lioness. And I was thinking, what is that? Like, I've never heard of such a thing, right? So I typed in leopard to Google. And it came up with this thing. There's something called a leopon. Have you ever heard of this? Yeah, well, look it up, you see. And I'll read it to you. It's a hybrid resulting from a crossing of a male leopard with a lioness. The head of the animal is similar to that of a lion, while the rest of the body carries similarities to leopards. These hybrids are produced in captivity and are unlikely to occur in the wild. Now, well, there's such a concept that's such a thing, right? So the reason that he says this is because it's a type of animal that hasn't got a lot of yichus, like, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't come from a normal marriage, doesn't come from a normal life, right? And yet apparently, notwithstanding its lack of strength and its lack of skill and ability, comparing it to other animals, it tries things that are crazy. In other words, it's bold, it's fearless, and so on. So the commentaries explain that what the Mishnah means when it comes to Askan Amer is a number of things. The first is that a person in their own spiritual growth, not how it affects other people necessarily, but in their own spiritual growth, has to have chutzpah. We have to have chutzpah. Person comes and says, you know, I don't have the skill, I don't have the level, I'm not like other people, I don't have the background, I'm older already, all that kind of thing. Have chutzpah, say, no, I can do this. A bit of lack of self-awareness when it comes to your own spiritual growth is not a bad thing. A bit of chutzpah in your own spiritual growth is not a bad thing. Try something you haven't tried. Do something you haven't done. Right? And as the Tiferet Yisrael, another commentary says, when you do that, Hashem promises that He'll give the strength. If you have the chutzpah to try and say, I'm going to do this, Hashem gives us the strength to do it, right? Push yourself forward. A bit of overconfidence. That's also another sort of manifestation of chutzpah, right? A bit of overconfidence when it comes to your own spiritual growth is not a bad thing at all. Now, this can manifest itself in many ways. Rabbeinu Yonah, a different one of the commentaries, he says that the boldness or the brazenness that we're talking about here, learning, is also sometimes you have to believe in yourself a bit more when it comes to influencing others. Like you said before, sometimes you have to stand up. Sometimes you have to speak out. Now, of course, the whole time it's always got to be done very carefully. See, there's a very fine line between good chutzpah and bad chutzpah, right? So, for example, speaking out, having the boldness to speak out. Sometimes that's a very bad thing. Sometimes that's an exceptionally good thing, right? We know that silence is a terrible thing. When people don't speak out, it's a bad thing. People sometimes are timid, they're insecure, they don't want to speak out. Now, sometimes that's a good thing because why make confrontation? Why unnecessarily offend other people? Why say, you know, the Talmud says that just like it's a mitzvah to say things to people that will be heard, it's a mitzvah to not to say things to people that they won't listen to. Because all you do is create animosity. If you know the person's not gonna listen, then what's the point, right? On the other hand, sometimes there's a place we just need to not be silent. So that's the question. You see, the question is, when is it bad overconfidence? When is it bad chutzpah? When is it good chutzpah? That's why we always need the introduction of Yehuda ben Tema. We always need to know, why am I doing this? Is this because I just want to be out there? I suppose I wanted to speak up. Or it's for the greater good. Sometimes we don't even know how to figure it out ourselves. We need to talk to other people. Or you know, get an objective view sometimes. Because it is hard to know the difference between when it's really, really good and when it's really, really bad. Talking about that, once as a kid, I remember I read a Jewish comic and had a story of one of the great rabbis of Europe talking about this thing about saying something and people will listen to it, not saying something. So I heard a story of a rabbi in Europe who was collecting money for a very important cause. And there was a wealthy person that was very respectful to everyone, but just wouldn't give anything. Just was very, very closed. And he was infamous for that, and he knew that. So the rabbi wanted to go to him. He said, "What's on bow? You shouldn't do it." So anyway, he knocks on his door. And he said, "Oh, rabbi, why are you coming?" He said, "Yeah, thank you. Can I come in? Do you mind if I sit down for a moment?" He says, "No problem." And he sits down and doesn't say anything. After 10 minutes, he gets up and he leaves. On the way out, this guy's chasing me. He said, "Rabbi, you didn't want something? Like, come in. And if you didn't want something, like, so why did you come?" So he told him, it was a good tactic, but it was a bit of a play on words in that passage. He said, "You know, I learned the passage that just like it's a mitzvah to say something to someone that will listen to, it's a mitzvah not to say something that won't listen to." And I was thinking to myself, like, how do you fulfill that mitzvah? I mean, what? If I don't say something to someone in America, because that's not a mitzvah. I mean, he's just not here. I'm here and he's there, right? So he says, it's a mitzvah not to say something. It obviously means that the mitzvah is, if you had the opportunity to say it, but you didn't say it, then that's the mitzvah. So he said, "I wanted to fulfill that mitzvah. So that's why I needed to come into your house for 10 minutes and then leave." And he gave him a donation afterwards. But that was the play on words, right? Okay. Another application of this idea of learning from the leopard to be bold is the two times where we learn in Shulchan Aruch and in the Mishnah and the commentaries and the Talmud that we must not be ashamed, and we must not be shy. Now, I just want to go back to this thing about the negativity of chutzpah, right? You know, there's a Talmud that says that Jewish people are supposed to connect, they're supposed to have a DNA And they're supposed to really have within them three very important traits. And they are Baishanim, Rahmanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. Baishanim means someone that's bashful. They're not ashamed. Ashamed is different. Shame is not always a good thing. But Baishanim means like refined. Not putting yourself forward. Not always being there in everyone's face, right? Like considering others, basically, right? That's the one, Baishanim. Rahmanim is compassion. And Gomlei Chasadim are people that do kindness, right? Those are the three fundamental traits. So Busha, being ashamed or shame in a positive sense, is actually considered one of the three fundamentals of Jewishness, right? And yet there are a couple of times where we are told to learn from the leper and not to be ashamed. One is a student. It says in Pirkei Avot, it's a different place in Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot is a treasure house, right? It says, Lo habayshan lamed, someone who's bashful and ashamed will not learn. Because you have to ask questions and you have to challenge your teacher. And that's good. He might challenge you back, but that's okay. That's how a person learns. If a person sits in a classroom and just is a goody-goody and never asks questions because they're either ashamed to be asked a stupid question or... By the way, it's a funny expression. I have a lot of times people come to me and say, Rabbi, I've got to ask you a stupid question. I think it's like a mechanism of some sort, like, I don't know if this is a good question or not, and you know, you're more knowledgeable than me maybe in certain areas, so maybe it's your question, so I've got to make sure, like, you think that I know that maybe it'll be a stupid question. My response is, no such thing as a stupid question. Because what do you mean? That's how you learn. It might be a question that involves some lack of knowledge because of no fault of your own you don't have yet. Because you haven't learned it yet. If you ask the question, you will learn it. Right? No one can know what you're thinking. No one can know what you do know, what you don't know. Right? So it's important to ask a question. Right? So that's why the one time Pirkei Avot says that we're supposed to have not be ashamed not and have more chutzpah, so to speak, is and not worry if people will laugh at you. Know, that is learn from the leopard. Ask. When it comes to learning, he who is the opposite of bold will not learn. So you have to do it in order to learn. The second is, and this is brought all over, in fact, it's very, very early on in the code of Jewish law, it brings this idea that not to be ashamed from those that scoff, to be tall and proud of our spiritual growth, of our Jewishness, and of things that we are doing, right? And this is on a collective level, an individual level. Very, very often people hold back on their Jewish pride, or hold back on their spiritual growth, hold back on behaving in a certain way, hold back in doing a mitzvah, whatever the case is, they hold back because they are worried about social pressure. They're worried, what are people going to say? Right? You know, what are we going to say? What's my next one neighbor going to say? Ah, you become a tzaddik overnight all of a sudden. What do you think? I don't know you kind of thing, right? All those things. Or people scoff. It's an environment where we live in a tough environment. We live in an environment that doesn't have good values. And it's very hard sometimes to live by good values, to live proudly Jewish, especially now. We live in this, a very relevant thing today. And one of the commentaries, many of the commentaries of this particular passage saying, what do we learn from it? And Amer, this is the one time we're not supposed to consider others. We're not supposed to be ashamed or embarrassed from those that scoff. We need to stand tall and say, this is me, this is what I stand for, this is my journey, and this is what I'm going to do. Right, so that's the learning from the leopard. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Mishnah says, be light as an eagle. What does that mean? So, there's a couple of things that we learn from an eagle. Interestingly enough, before we explain, we learn from an eagle. An eagle is an extremely non-kosher bird. What I mean by an extremely non-kosher bird? There's an interesting halachic phenomenon. In fact, it's very interesting. It's actually connected with this week's parsha. This week's parsha is one of the two times in the Torah which it tells us which animals are kosher, which fish are kosher, and which birds are kosher, right? So when it comes to animal, we know that the kosher signs of an animal is chewing the cud and having split hoofs, right? The fish, kosher fish have to fins and scales. Each one has their own lessons. And then the bird is a very complicated one, the poultry, because the Torah actually doesn't tell us which birds are kosher. It just gives us a list of birds that aren't kosher. That's the way it does it. Because apparently most birds are kosher. But the only problem is that because it gives us a list of birds that aren't kosher, and we're not exactly sure what they all are, because they have different names and things, so therefore the Talmud goes in the long length that we figure it out that there are signs of a kosher bird, and yet today we don't actually just, this is just a fun fact, just for knowledge, but we actually don't eat kosher birds, even if it has all the signs of kashrut, because we're not 100% sure if it fits into that list or not that list, and therefore we only eat birds if we have a tradition of being kosher, like chicken, like that kind of thing, like duck, and so on, right? In fact, just an interesting general knowledge fun fact is that turkey was discovered a little bit later than most poultry, and there was a whole discussion whether it's actually kosher or not. Now, it certainly has the signs of a kosher bird, and it's quite similar to a chicken. In fact, it was called, in Hebrew, it was called for a while, I don't know if it's still called that, but it was called Tarnagol Hodu. It's called an Indian chicken, because I think they sort of discovered it around that part of the world. And when it was widely spread, there was a whole discussion whether turkey is in fact kosher or not. Because we don't have a tradition, like it was a new thing. So most people maintain that we do have a tradition because it's actually just part of the chicken family. It's not a new bird, it's just part of the... And chickens, we know are kosher, we eat chickens, right? Others held differently, but the halacha was, the Jewish law was mainstreamly accepted that turkeys are okay and we eat turkey today, right? But there was one great Kabbalistic sage, his name was the Shalom. He lives in Germany. He actually had a problem with turkey and he requested his family not to eat turkey. He said, I'm not going to rule on this. I know most people are ruling differently, that it's kosher. And he felt that people should refrain from eating turkey, and his family didn't eat turkey. And I have relatives, I have a cousin till today, who on his mother's side, and I'm cousins through his father's side, but I have a cousin that through his mother's side is a descendant of the Shalom, and they don't eat turkey. Interesting. Why was it? Oh yes, now let me go back to why I said that. So, having said that we only eat birds that have a tradition, but there are signs of a kosher bird. And there are four signs of a kosher bird. I'm not sure exactly what they are, but there are four signs of a kosher bird, and how their feet are, and how the stomach is, and so on. Most non-kosher birds have some of the signs of a kosher bird. Three out of four sometimes, right? The eagle apparently is the only one that has no kosher signs. So it's like a very not kosher bird. And yet it made its way into the Mishnah. This is the idea. The idea is it doesn't matter. If it's a creation from God, there's a lesson to be learned, right? So it says, by the way, and also in Kabbalah, often the eagle is quoted very, very disparagingly because it rises up. It's a non-kosher bird and it rises up very high. And it's a symbol of what we call in Kabbalah the klippah, the impurities of the world that often challenge us. And God says there's a pasuk, a verse in the Tanakh that tells us, Im tagbihi kanesher, God is talking to the forces of evil, the forces that challenge us to do the wrong thing. If you will lift yourself up with arrogance like an eagle, I will bring you down eventually, says God, right? So that's like kind of the symbolism of the eagle. But yet, the eagle is very heavy. It's a very heavy bird. And it rises very high. Okay, so on that, it's a bit of a similar lesson to the leopard that we need to know. Even though we might feel very lazy, we might feel very heavy and difficult to do what we need to do, we need to learn from the eagle to be light, to lift ourselves up high, and to engage what we need to engage to. Now, apparently, the eagle, it flies with tremendous force and precision, but it has very, very well and finely developed wings. Wings, yeah. I guess all birds do, but particularly the eagle, apparently, right? And apparently, for it to fly properly at its full strength, those two wings need to be equal. They need to be equally designed and symmetric and so on. What is the idea? Well, what are we learning from the eagle? The two wings of the eagle represent the two types of mitzvot that we engage in, the two components of Judaism, which is what we know as Ben Adam LaMakom and Ben Adam LaChaviro, between man and man and between man and God, right? That's a famous thing. We have mitzvot. In fact, even the two tablets, the Ten Commandments on either side, one side is primarily between man and God, like believe in God, don't have other gods, Shabbat, don't swear falsely, and so on. And the other one is between man and man, don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery, right? All those kind of things. And we have, that's Judaism, and both are important. And from the perspective of Jewish learning, these two mitzvot, these two parts of the Torah, are actually equal. And we only really grow, we only really come connected to God when we might not be exactly the same in each one, but we respect them and we value them at the same. We say they're both part and they're both equally important and they're both part of the Torah, right? I've often had people tell me, you know, that the main thing is just to be a good person. I said, can you define good person? But I don't need to, you know, engage in any mitzvot. Just be a good person. I said, what's a good person? Oh, you know, not to lie, to be honest, treat people nicely, respectfully, and all that kind of stuff. I said, that's half the equation, right? From a Jewish point of view, that's only half, right? The same thing, I get the opposite question sometimes. You know, how come I know some religious people who steal? I said, no, you don't. It's not impossible. He said, but I know, I'm telling you, guy's got a long beard. He's not religious. He can't be religious if he steals. Steals one of the mitzvot of the Torah. What do you mean you're religious and you steal? Now, again, we all make mistakes in any part of the Torah once in a while, right? But, or we all lie maybe when we shouldn't, etc. And we'll talk about Lashon Hara. But we're talking about the approach, right? What are we committed to? So the eagle's lesson is that there's two wings, and they're both equally as important. Good from the Torah perspective means to be engaged in both. Either emphasis on one to the undermining the other is a problem of being good or godly, I should say, right? So that's one of the concepts that we learn from an eagle. But another very interesting lesson we learn from an eagle is this, and it's very relevant to this time of the year. In Hebrew, an eagle is a nesher, right? Nesher, that's the word in Hebrew. I don't know modern Hebrew, but certainly in biblical Hebrew and in Mishnaic Hebrew. Apparently, the eagle's characteristics is that after once in a while, when it gets a bit older, it sheds its feathers. Did you know that? I didn't know that. It sheds its feathers, which makes it very light, and then it comes back in full strength, and it grows them again. Right? Now again, in the eagle's case, it's just an animalistic trait. Not good or bad, it's just animalistic, and it's for the purpose of it soaring very high again and climbing very high above all the other animals, which is part of the arrogant characteristic of an eagle. But what we learn from that is the importance of shedding our feathers. Sometimes we get stuck, we get held back, we become spiritually heavy or emotionally heavy, and we just can't seem to move forward because our wings are old and they're stuck in, they become affected and become damaged, and we've been repeating the same mistakes many, many, many times. The eagle teaches us that we are able to shed our wings. That heaviness should not hold us back, because we can be like an eagle. We can shed those wings and start again. Right? That's really, and it's again, everything happens, nothing happens by chance that we're having this discussion today. This Shabbat, of course, is the Shabbat that gives blessing to the month of Elul. Rosh Chodesh Elul is on, this is Sunday, Sunday and Monday. And we begin the journey between now and Yom Kippur and then Sukkot and so on, right? And it's this time of the year that we're supposed to reflect on the year gone by, and we're supposed to become a little bit better. We're supposed to take upon ourselves an upgrade in our growth, in our Jewish connection, and so on, right? And often we feel stuck. That's the nature of the human being. We just feel completely stuck. And there's good reason, because, you know, we've been trying many times. We've made the same hachlata, the same resolution many times, and we have people around us that are holding us back, or whatever the reason is. We just feel stuck, and the older we get, the more stuck we feel. And the Mishnah is telling us, no, channel the energy from the eagle. Take the lightness of an eagle and channel it into a good context. Shed your feathers. Don't be defined by the past. Don't get stuck in the past, right? And that doesn't mean don't learn from the past. The past is our biggest teacher, right? But there's a huge difference, and this is part of the whole tshuva process, the whole return process that we go through during Elul, to know how to, you know, because Elul is called the month of reflection. We are supposed to think about the past. We're not supposed to ignore the past. We're supposed to learn from the past. But there's a tremendous and huge difference between learning from the past and getting stuck in the past. And this is what the eagle teaches us. Shed your feathers. Kal kanesha, be as light as an eagle. Now, an eagle is not a light animal, but it becomes light because every so often it sheds its feathers and can soar again, can go upwards again and fly above a lot of the other animals. Okay.
Have you got any tips on how to get unstuck?
Ooh. yeah, so I think, well, it's a good question. No, no, it's good. It's good you asked the question. We just talk about asking questions, right? So, no, my difficulty wasn't what to answer. The difficulty is how to put that into a minute. But I think it's two things, two very quick things. The most important thing is that although we fail, and we all fail because we're human beings, Our problem is that the primary reason that we get stuck is because we define ourselves by the things that we fail in. We define ourselves by our failure, right? In other words, we failed. And when we failed, we think, well, if we keep on failing, if I keep on failing, then the I is a little messed up, right? And it can't be further from the truth there, because I have to take responsibility for my failures, but as we've talked about many times, the failures don't define who we are. Because there's a part of us, the purity of the soul, that never failed. We only fail on an external level. On the layer level, on the garment level, as we've talked about many times. Right? We fail on those parts that God gave us, on our character traits, on our emotions, on our thinking, and so on. But there's something that we have that is always, has never sinned. There's a part of us that's never sinned. And that's part of the whole journey of Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah particularly is the part of the journey where before we fix and before we take responsibility. So just very briefly, how the whole journey works is, in Elul we reflect on the year gone by, right? And then we come to the conclusion, oy vey, I mean, it's hard to reflect because we discover, like, you know, sometimes it's better not to think about it because we don't remember what we've done, right? But we reflect and we're honest about ourselves, the good things and the bad, and then we feel a bit, you know, unsettled by the bad, which is not a bad thing to feel unsettled. But the problem is then, hold on a second, that means I'm like really messed up. So then we interrupt almost the process with the Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah, I've talked about this many times, Rosh Hashanah, we don't talk about specifics. Why? Because Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar, which comes to the depth of the neshama. On Rosh Hashanah, we actually dig deeper and we connect very deep to the part of us that never sinned altogether. There's a part of us that never failed. There's a part of us that's above failure. That's the real us. And we remind ourselves that at our core, we are actually pure. And therefore, we can be like the eagle. Therefore, we can shed the past and start again. We'll always start again. And I guess the second point is that, unlike human beings that only give one chance, two chances, three chances, God is different. God is endless chances. He doesn't mind. Every day gives us a fresh day. We say Modeani every single morning. We might be 95, but we're still saying Modeani. Because that God is saying, I'm giving you another day. It's fresh. Let yourself go from the past. Don't define yourself. Don't get stuck in the past. And do what you need to do today. Focus on today. Learn from the past, but focus on what you can do today that's going to be meaningful and purposeful. That's a crash course in how we do this. Needs thinking in this. Okay. Let's go. Okay, we need to move on. So the third one is the deer. Ratz katzvi. Run like a deer. Or be swift like a deer, as some people translate it, right? That's the idea of alacrity. Doing things, getting things done, not procrastinating. It holds a very special place in Judaism. To use every moment, not to waste time. To something comes your way, to take the opportunity, to do it right away. Right? Why? Because as we've talked about many times, God gives us each day. It's precious. Time is precious. Not to, right? Now, the deer is running, it's swift, but we don't know where it's running to or what it's running for. But we, right? We are, I mean, it's running because that's what it does. But we need to learn that trait, because it's a very important trait in terms of how we serve God and how we live life with meaning. Not only to do good things, but to use each day, to use time well. But we also need to understand, this is really important, that being quick, alacrity, doesn't mean rushing. People often confuse the two things. In fact, if you ever witnessed a deer running, it's actually not in a rush. Deers run very graciously. Now, I saw this firsthand. I learned this. I don't know if I ever told you this, but to me, it was like a shocking moment. My parents-in-law, when I got married to Dina, we used to go for Shabbos to Morristown, New Jersey, where she comes from. It's a very suburbia place, and my parents-in-law lived like down and down, it's like a quiet street in like a big forest. Now there's a lot, it's much more built up with a lot of houses. But actually, my father loved it. He used to come home and he would learn all day, and after he taught in yeshiva, he loved the quiet around, right? Growing up in the middle of Johannesburg is a bit different, but I'm sitting with him talking one day, and his dining room was a window, like a big window going off to the forest, essentially. And suddenly a deer comes all up to the window, honestly, like looking at it. And then after I realized, it's like deers running around. Where my son lives now, in Muncie, in Pomona also, you have deers suddenly that just appear sometimes, because around mountains, a lot of trees and stuff like that. But I got to see how deers work, right? I was thinking of the Mishnah, but I saw the deer Ratzkatzvi, you've got to run like a deer. But deers don't actually run in a rush. They don't do that also. They actually very graciously move. They just, yeah.
Is a deer kosher to eat?
It is, actually, yes.
So,
there are restaurants in America that you can, I think it's called venison, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, very expensive meat, apparently.
They're not so difficult to catch.
Yeah, yeah, but you can. If you catch it, you can eat it. Shecht it, you got to do it. You got to do it all, yeah, like the right way. But yeah, it is. Now, what's the idea there? Because Judaism places tremendous emphasis on not wasting time and using every moment, but also places tremendous emphasis on being present. In other words, when you're doing something, it needs to be done properly, slowly, with full. So the idea of alacrity is something comes your way, get immersed in it, but don't rush it. When you rush it, you lose it. And you don't do it properly. You're not fully present. You're not taking full opportunity of the whole moment, right? You're not taking what the moment is giving you. So that's why I think it's very specific that we learn quickness, or zrizut, as we call it, lakri, getting things done in a from a deer who runs, but runs with intent. Sorry? Yeah, purposefully, exactly. And the last one, of course, is gibor ka'ari. You've got to be strong like a lion. I'll say two things. First of all, the way it's always taught is the following. It's got to do with the strength of a lion. A lion gets up in the morning, doesn't care what's standing in its way, and it gets up and it's ready to kill, actually. It's ready to kill its prey, right? That's what the Pasuk tells us. But that the way where this is quoted, in fact, it's quoted in the very, very beginning of the Code of Jewish Law. It says we wake up in the morning, we should be gibor ka'ari. We have to have the self-discipline of a lion. It says, like, especially in the winter when, you know, we tempt to just go on the other side and just, it's warm in bed and, you know, maybe we don't have to get up to do what we need to do. Maybe we'll just sluff for another hour, you know, that kind of thing. It says, no, gibor ka'ari, you're going to be strong like a lion, get up. And it's about self-discipline and sense of purpose and know what you're doing. But what's interesting is, and this is only very relevant today, of course, you know that the war that Israel is fighting at the moment was based on the pasuk that compares Jewish people to a lion, right? And it's a pasuk in the parasha of Balak where we have the story of Bilam, the non-Jewish prophet that was commissioned by the king Balak to come and curse the Jewish people. And of course, God doesn't let him, and he ends up praising the Jewish people. And he says the following. Bibi Netanyahu quoted this a few times lately because that was the, you know, it's called Operation Lion. He says to Balak, I can't curse this nation because hen am kelavi yakum. Behold, the people who arise like a lion, like an awesome lion. Lavi is a different name for lion. It means like an awesome lion. Ucharin nisnasan lifts up like a lion. He does not lie down until he consumes his prey and drinks the blood of the slain. What does he mean? So Rashi says, what does it mean in terms of channeling this something good? Doesn't mean you have to get up to kill someone in the morning. I mean, sometimes you have to fight a war, but for us, what does it mean when we get up in the morning? So he says, Rashi says like this, that what Bilam was saying, look at this nation. When they get up in the morning, they exert themselves with strength, like a lion. To do what? To grab mitzvot. To grab good deeds. Right? That's the prey. In other words, what does that mean, to grab? Why is it called prey? Because when we wake up in the morning, there's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be things that are going to stand in our way. Always going to be things that are going to try and prevent us. First of all, internally, we have the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. We have temptations from within, and there'll be things from without. But the Jewish people are a nation that they know they have such a sense of purpose that it comes with discipline that they wake up in the morning to grab a mitzvah. Wasn't it grab a mitzvah? So the commentaries explain that grabbing a mitzvah means that you're enthusiastic. In other words, what do you mean grab? It doesn't mean grab it from somewhere else or grab it in a negative sense. Grabbing means you don't put it off. Something, there's a big difference between something that you love and something that is a duty, right? No one wakes up in the morning and runs to pay taxes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you can do it because you got to do it, right? or take out the garbage or whatever the case is, right? Or fix the light bulb. These are not things that we run to do, right? Because they do these things that have to be done. Then there's things that you want to do, you love to do. You know, you want to rush to go to your grandson's siddur party or Shabbos party in kindergarten. Why? Because it's something good, it's something beautiful. You love him, you love her, you love it, whatever, right? So our relationship with God is, and this is the concept, not about just getting up in the morning with strength and overcoming the difficulties, but getting up in the morning with love to grab what you really want with enthusiasm. The lion gets up to grab his prey. We get up to grab good deeds, to grab purpose, to grab the things that we know are important, because we do them not just as duties, we do them as things that we love to do, we want to do, we want to engage in. And that's the lesson that we learn from the lion. So those are the four animals, channeling the energy in a positive way, but on the basis that we always think about Yehuda ben Tema, we think about doing it out of humility, out of higher purpose, so that we do it properly, and we incorporate those things that can be very animalistic and sometimes egocentric in the animal, but we absorb it in the purposeful way, living for a higher purpose. Okay, have a good week.